Hello, everyone, and welcome to Apartment Investing for Early Retirement. Today's guest is Gwaith Smith. He has a degree in economics from James Madison University, and after graduation, Gwaith worked at an old Rockefeller company performing domestic and international cost of living analysis. He then transitioned into investing and worked as a proprietary equity trader for multiple New York-based companies. His career turned to Allied Health, where he became a prosthetist, designing, fabricating prosthetics for people with limb loss. He began investing in real estate in 2016 in an effort to create additional income streams. This hobby has since become a passion and a business. To date, he has co-sponsored three projects that total 664 units. He is a limited partner on an additional 1,134 units. He owns 19 units and is set to close on another 42 units in first quarter of 2020. Gwaith, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Quite the list. You've worn many hats.
Yeah, I've always seemed to have done that in my life, and people sort of make fun of me about it, but yeah.
Quite the transition from trading to becoming a prosthetist.
Yeah, my wife thought I was crazy when I told her what I was pursuing, and I think there was an intervention of sorts where she actually called my parents, and they had a discussion to see if I was, you know, of sound mind. They didn't know where that one came from.
So yeah, you've obviously had some experience in real estate investing, quite rapid growth compared to most out there, I would say. And it's nice, a little bit of a diverse background, you know, starting out with 2 and 4 units, kind of building up into some larger properties as a passive investor, now becoming more active. What really led you into multifamily versus other avenues within real estate?
So I've actually tried other avenues within real estate. Multifamily, to me, it just seems to be the one that works out best for me. You know, I tried my hand at a flip, and that turned into a rental. And, you know, I've done some other, you know, like arbitrage private lending gigs, which works out, you know, fine, but it's nothing that I see as sustainable and something that can really, you know, provide the life that I'm trying to create.
That's something that there's certainly all the opportunity in the world out there. It's just a matter of finding the right properties and the right niche for you. You know, flipping is really another job, which, I mean, to be fair, you know, syndication is another job. Investing is another job, depending on what scale you get into it, but it's a business. So going through with how you went from, you know, a couple of smaller properties, transitioned into being a limited partner on some deals. Would you mind going into that for how you kind of determined what were the right deals for you, what you were looking for, and things that you know now that you might not have known then that other investors that are looking to be more passive in it should kind of keep an eye out for?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, I didn't kind of start this thinking that I was going to purely be a limited partner on apartment syndications. I started, like you said, I invested in a couple of smaller properties, and in my desire to go bigger, I thought that might be an avenue, meaning syndication, that I would want to get into. And I saw investing as a limited partner as a way to see how that worked out, see how it was on the limited partnership side, see what I could learn on the limited partnership side that might then, you know, lead to an opportunity to get on the general partnership side. So, you know, I saw it as a means to learn as well as to earn, you know, some money, earn some return. And the returns to me looked, you know, looked really good. So I started, you know, I started looking at what you would consider the known people out there. You know, some of the guys that you see on the podcast episodes and whatnot. And I reached out, had some phone conversations to get on their investor list. And, you know, there was one that I felt pretty good about. I was a listener of the podcast, and you know, I felt like there was a familiarity with that. So when an opportunity became available, I invested in it, and then another opportunity became available, not too long later, and I took the plunge into that one as well, and you know, started seeing how I was communicated with as a limited partner, started reading the reports as they came out. So we'd get monthly updates, but we'd also get quarterly financials. And, you know, so going into it, you know, I don't think in hindsight that I vetted the deals as comprehensively as I do now, or I knew what to look for like I know what to look for now. You know, back then, I think it was more of a trust factor. So it was more feeling comfortable that the person that was running these deals had run previous ones, and the whole nine yards. And so that's what got me involved in the limited partnership side of things. And honestly, it was, you know, you call it coincidence, call it happenstance, being at the right place at the right time. But that's ultimately what did lead me to the general sponsorship side of things.
Perhaps it doesn't really tie in all too much, but it just seems like being an equity trader, did that kind of give you a little bit more insight as to how to kind of look into investment vehicles?
Not really. You know, as a proprietary equities trader, I was focused more on technical analysis than I was on fundamental analysis. So, you know, as a trader of stocks back then, I was looking at chart patterns on a intraday basis, on a weekly basis, monthly basis, but more on an intraday basis. And, you know, you're looking for levels of resistance, levels of support, you're looking for, you know, retracements or breakouts or breakdowns. And, you know, I looked at that more so than I did the news or the fundamentals, because, you know, at the end of the day, a stock may be up, you know, a point or a whatever. Maybe it's only up 25 cents, but the stock could have moved up a dollar, down a dollar, you know, had these swings in that day, which is where you're making your money. So it's a much more of a short-term play. And, you know, we always said that proprietary traders were sort of notorious long-term investors. So, you know, that didn't really help me out in terms of vetting longer-term deals. That's something that I sort of graduated and, you know, helped become familiar with later on.
With being in it, now that you've kind of transitioned into a little bit more of being on the general partnership side, you know, being a co-sponsor, what are the main differences for people that are maybe thinking about following the same plan, I guess, that you have, how now you're developing in on the sponsorship side? What's really the biggest difference that you've seen thus far in terms of how you need to, again, analyze those deals and how much extra work is really entailed in that? Obviously, being passive, fairly hands-off, people can kind of do a little bit more research as they would like. But on the operational side, what's been the biggest change for you that maybe you didn't expect?
Well, I would say you're right. There's a ton more work. And the, you know, the biggest reason that there's a ton more work is that you know, as my role as a co-sponsor was really raising equity. So it's not just my money at play now. It's other people that I've brought the deal to, you know, that might be investing in this project. So, you know, I can't afford to, like I said, on those first deals to not have done as comprehensive or, you know, as a job as I needed to, because now that there's other people's money at play, I mean, I better know, you know, that I have done everything to minimize risk, to keep that money safe. And, you know, that's always what I preach. And it goes back to what I said about, you know, having trust. So it's trusting the people that you're working with and, you know, only getting into those deals where you feel comfortable with the people who are running them, even more so than the projections. I mean, I feel like you can look at 100, you know, you can look at 100 limited partnership deals and a lot of them can look very, very similar. The main difference is the people running those. And I'm sure there's a ton of great people out there doing it. I'm sure there's a ton of people that aren't so, you know, great and, you know, maybe not the ethics that you align with or the morals that you jive with. You know, I know that the people that I got involved with, we were very clear from the beginning as to how we foresaw everything as a what we call the long game. So we know there's not going to be one deal that's going to make us, but there could be one deal that would break us. So if that first deal that we did together didn't perform as we said it was going to perform, you know, how many investors are going to come back for the next deal? And like I said, like, we know we're not making it on just one deal. So, I mean, this is something that we want to build for years to come and do multiple deals with repeat investors. But, you know, if you come across as shady, or if you don't tell the truth, if you're not ethical, if you don't perform like you said, without, you know, good reason, then, you know, you're going to have a pretty short career. So, you know, we always put the limited partners first, the passive investors first ahead of us, because, you know, for that very reason. We know that they're the ones that you have to make happy, and you can't, you know, you can't take for yourself at the expense of them, because, you know, who's going to come back for the next deal? So we all kind of shared that, you know, that mentality. We were all okay, you know, not making as much, or if push came to shove, you know, we would, you know, kind of give up what we were earning for the limited partnership side, because we know that's where, you know, that's where our success will ultimately lie long term.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, that's something where you really have that responsibility to them. You are utilizing a big pool of money to be able to buy these properties and to turn out those returns. You know, that's a huge responsibility. Like you said, it's one thing when it's your own. You need to take 100 times the care of their money than you do yours. And you don't want to lose any of yours, but it's making sure that you're aligned for the rest of the sponsorship team, if you have partners, that you're in the same frame of mind with everything. How did you, A, come across your partners that you've had? And, you know, how did you determine that it was right to partner up?
So that back when I was saying that my limited partnership deals led to the co-sponsorship deal, I was at a conference and I met them at a conference, and we were just having lunch together, just randomly. You know, we're talking about what we do, and they were telling me about a property that they had, that they were about to have under contract, that they were working on. And they were saying how it was directly across the street from, you know, this other person's property, who I happened to be in that deal, you know, with. I was a limited partner. So, you know, as we're talking, we just kind of figured out that I was in that deal. You know, they asked me how my deal was going, and I said, you know, from my perspective and from what, you know, what's being shared with us, you know, things are going well, you know, we're being paid out. The projection that we were, you know, told we'd be paid out, you know, it seems like, you know, this is where our occupancy is. This is, you know, this is what we're getting for rents and whatnot. So, you know, I started sharing just kind of how that was performing, and, you know, and they were looking at their projections for theirs, and the conversation just kind of continued, you know, for a while. And, you know, we got to the point where they, you know, they asked if I'd be interested in raising capital, and I'd never done it before. It's not something that I'm terribly comfortable with, or I should say I wasn't terribly comfortable with, but I looked at my situation, and, you know, I live on Long Island in New York. I don't have, you know, deals across the street. You know, they're not, you know, screaming deals around me, but, you know, there is money in New York, and that's around me. So I figured I was going to play the hand dealt. I was very upfront with them about, you know, what I thought I could and couldn't do. And I didn't want to overpromise anything. And, you know, and their mantra was always, you know, under promise, over deliver. So, you know, I was just very honest. I said, I've never done it before. Like, do you think you can raise this much? I said, I think I can. It got to a point, like, as I got down the path, that I changed that. I was like, you know what? I don't think I can, because I had sent out my introduction email. I had sent out, you know, the slide deck. We had the webinar, this and that. And I didn't have the soft commitments of the amount that I thought I could raise. I thought I could raise $1 million. And, you know, so I was pretty quick to get on the phone. And at that time we were speaking pretty frequently, you know, we're speaking, you know, maybe once a day or so. And, you know, kind of going over everything. And, you know, I was kind of preparing for the worst in that phone conversation. I was like, man, they're going to think I'm a failure. You know, they're going to, you know, this is going to be a hard conversation to have. I'm letting them down. And it was the exact opposite. There was such gratitude, you know, for me being honest with them to say, like, hey, you know, I don't think I can do it. And, you know, I was told, you know, like, basically, thank you for telling me that's okay. You know, do you think you can do like this much? You know, and I said, yeah, I think I can do that, you know, based on where I'm at with soft commitments, I think I can hit that mark. And, you know, basically told me, you know, you'd be surprised that, like, some people, like, they don't come close to hitting what they said they would, but they don't say anything. And then it's a surprise if you scramble. You know, it's like, at least now, you know, I know that some people are actually doing better than what they thought. So it's like, you know, we can track it. We can see where we are, and we can, you know, we can adjust on the fly. And, so, I ultimately did a little better than what I, kind of reverted my estimate to. And it was just a great experience. And it was the scariest experience of the ones that we've done together because it was our first time working together. So, you have those what ifs, when you're trying to fall asleep and something as crazy as like, what if they take the money and run? What if they leave the country, this, that, and the other? Cause I felt really comfortable, with the relationship that we had up to that point, but it still was our first deal together. And, that was something that I told all my investors was that, it's a fairly new relationship. I'm comfortable with these guys. I'm putting my money in this deal, but you just need to know this is our first go around together. And it led to the second, which led to the third, and honestly, there's going to be another one. So,
and that's the thing, is just to be transparent, have that communication, and just don't try to hide something. Just things don't go according to plan, and it's how you kind of react to it. So when you kind of joined up on that first deal, had you just discussed, try it out on this first one and see moving forward, or was it a pretty rapid succession where with this deal and then we have another one kind of that we're looking at where maybe do it again? Or did you really kind of just see how that first one went?
So on that first one, it was more of a see how it went. And like I said, it went really well. And when I say really well, like not that the deal was a home run by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, the deal's performing as we said it would, but what I mean is that we just worked together really well. So, we had a scramble at the end to get enough funds to close. We had to, I'm trying to remember back to that one, what exactly happened. There was an extension and it really did come down to the wire. And I was, they were willing to take on other GPs who could come in and raise money. I introduced them to somebody that ultimately came on and raised some money and I made a few other introductions. So, they were impressed with the fact that, I was trying to help them, in any way that I could. And ultimately that is what led to the second deal together. So the second deal was a smaller property. It was 104 units. It was a much smaller raise. It was one that they could do within their network pretty easily. But they approached me and asked me if I wanted to be a part of it. And I even said, I don't think you guys need me here. And they're like, but we want to grow the relationship. We had a great experience on the first one. Let's just do it. Come on board, And I was like, all right, I'll do it. And they were pretty much like, it doesn't even matter like what you raise, if anything, we'll have it covered. And I had more, that one oversubscribed almost immediately. And I had more people that wanted to invest in that one that I had space for. So, I ultimately had to turn people away and give my apologies that there wasn't enough room. And, on the next one though, there should be more room and they did, it went fast. And it was a totally different experience than the first one when we were, scrambling to raise enough to cross the finish line.
And what was the size of that first deal?
348.
Yeah. A touch bigger.
Yeah.
And where are these properties at? That you've had all three of them?
Yeah, they're in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. So the first one was in South Dallas, and the second one was actually a suburb called Waxahachie.
Okay. And then the people that you partnered up with, had they had, an extensive experience prior to that first deal that you were working together on, that they had, scaled up to that? Or, kind of what did they look like?
That 348 would have been their biggest to that point in their careers. They had closed three others, in the 100 to 250 range, and this that would have been their fourth at the time. So they had experience in closing the deals, operating the deals. They didn't have any that went full cycle yet, so they were still relatively new there.
All right, awesome. And kind of looking at it, what was, I guess, the biggest challenge that you've had thus far with making that transition, or, something that's kind of held you back that you've, had to get a little creative, work a little extra harder to kind of overcome that?
So I'm not the most tech savvy guy in the world, and in equity and whatnot, we had to learn how to use a CRM. We had to learn how to organize our contacts, our potential investors, how to create campaigns. So that was a little bit of a pain point, and to be honest, it still is. You know, it's something that my wife, she's part of this as well, and she helps me out with. You know, I'll kind of do the wording, and I'll create the, what we're going to send out, and then she'll create it in the CRM and blast it out to the investors.
What's the CRM that you use? Did you kind of make your own, or do you have a platform?
We use a platform, so we use ActiveCampaign.
Okay. Kind of going back, if they're looking at the broad picture from when you first started investing or even before then until now, if you could have changed one thing or knew something then that you know now, what would it be?
Man, I mean, everything is always 20/20 in hindsight. I feel like I'm able to underwrite much better now. So, going back then, to look at those deals with my eyes now, I think would be helpful. Not that I'd change anything. There's no deal that I've invested in that I wish I hadn't. They're all working out, but I know that, especially those first two limited partnership deals, I didn't know exactly, what I was looking at. I didn't know necessarily how to vet a neighborhood or how to compare what the T12 says to what the projections are and to see what assumptions are made and, how they're increasing value, what's going on a cash flow basis on both a monthly and annual basis and why they're changing, So to look back on those deals with what I know now, it would be interesting just to see if my actions would have been the same. Not that I would change my actions.
Were there any of the deals that you did invest in that now with your, a better proficiency in underwriting that you would have maybe not invested in?
So to be honest, I haven't gone back and looked at the original kind of offering memory, the offerings and everything that closely now, I'll look at the ongoing performance and everything, but I haven't gone back to the original, projections.
Okay. Maybe you shouldn't.
keep
looking forward, but so just, kind of looking forward, the 42 unit that you have that you should be closing on sooner than later here. What was the structure for that? Is that also a syndication or is it something different?
That's a strict joint venture. So that's, I'm in the Jake and Gino community and this is four guys, me and three other guys. And we sort of part our team together. I say before the deal, but like the deal came around and we kind of rounded out the team there. But the goal was to put four guys together that were pretty like-minded that, we thought, if things went sideways, that we'd all kind of have similar reactions and we'd all kind of, band together. And, for instance, if it comes to a choice of, do we have to leave money in the property or, because things go a little bit sideways or versus say taking a distribution at the expense of the property, what are we all going to choose to do? And we all were the people who would say, no, we want to leave the money in the property. We want to make sure we take care of all the maintenance, all the deferred maintenance, basically, again, going back to that long view, I think we're all, kind of long view people. And so we'll settle for, we'll take delayed gratification, over the greater good of the project, as opposed to, forcing a distribution sooner. So yeah, it's four of us and it's just been awesome. I mean, it's just been an awesome experience and, it's fun. I think the most of partnerships, I think partnerships are the way to go. I think you get the right partners. It just is, you can go so much faster, so much further and, you're splitting up duties, you're celebrating wins, you're commiserating losses, it's much better to do it in a group of people that you enjoy working with as opposed to doing it on your own.
So with that deal, what really made this the right deal?
A lot of it was the geographic location. So we were looking in the Louisville market and we were sent a deal by a broker in Southern Indiana before we were even out in that market. And we didn't even give it a second look. You know, it's like, yeah, we didn't know anything about it. Like, you know, we're not looking in Southern Indiana. You know, we're looking in Louisville, and we had a visit planned. So we were going out to meet with some property managers, to meet with some brokers and whatnot. And one of the meetings we had was with that broker who sent us a Southern Indiana deal. And he had asked us about it, and we were straight up with him and said, you know what, to be honest, I'm like, we're not really looking in Southern Indiana. And he said, have you been there? We were like, I don't know how to get there, you know? No, we haven't been there. And he's like, you can walk there. He's like, it's right across the bridge. And he's telling us how they put these two bridges in within the last 2 years that basically connected, you know, Louisville to, you know, to the cities right across the street in Southern Indiana. Taxes are a little bit higher there, but the schools are better. But he's like, just go. He's like, honestly, you can see with your own two eyes the path of progress. He's like, I'm not even like talking about like, there's a path of progress. He's like, you can see what I mean. And that's all he really said. So we decided, like, why not? Let's go drive in Southern Indiana. So we took a drive. And when I say a drive, like, we crossed a bridge. So, I mean, it's minutes from Louisville. And, I mean, he was right. I mean, the pavers were out on the streets, you know, and, like, they're paving streets. You saw the big box stores, you know, coming in. I mean, it even looked nicer than Louisville to us. And we're driving around just looking at each other like, man, like, this is actually really nice. So we decided to drive by the property that he had sent us that we just kind of didn't give a second thought to. And we're looking, and we're like, this actually looks, I mean, like, you know, nice. It passes like the sniff test here. So we dug deeper, and, you know, we ended up putting an offer on it. And, you know, we ultimately agreed upon a price, and you know, the more research we did into Southern Indiana and Jeffersonville and Clarksville, the more we liked it. And you know, we visited with the Economic Development Council. You know, we were at City Hall, and you know, just everything was just lining up. So again, to answer your question a long way, is it was the geography. It was, you know, us feeling that we had a good team together. And, you know, because of those things, and it looked like it, you know, kind of hit our marks in terms of what we were looking for, in terms of cash flow and appreciation, that we decided to take a stab at it.
Awesome. And how did you kind of figure out the roles? Do you have someone that's local to, you know, within that general region that can be more boots on the ground, or how are you kind of tackling that with it being a joint venture?
Yep. So we don't have anybody local, and that was something that early on that you know, we didn't know if we would be able to do this without having somebody local. So we tried to connect with some people to see if we can get a local person as part of the team. It didn't end up working out. Our property management company, they have a 100 and something unit property very close to this property. So we're able to share payroll with that property. It's almost like a sister property, if you will. And because our property manager is right there, we were able to, you know, be confident in taking this deal down. Freddie Mac was going to let us do it as well. So, I mean, that's pretty much what it comes down to. You know, we had heard that we wouldn't be able to get agency debt on it because we didn't have somebody within 100 miles of the deal. But we were able to get around that with, you know, with the property management team that we have on board, and with all the other, I guess, boxes that we checked as a team.
Yeah, fantastic. So what's kind of the plan with that? You know, is there, you know, value add plays to it? Is it, what's kind of the whole period that you're targeting for it? Obviously, things can change, but kind of going in, what's your plan?
So our plan really is long-term hold in this one. Like, we're not looking to flip or anything. This, you know, this property, it consists of two buildings, 42 units, one building, each unit's been renovated. And the other building, only two of them have been renovated. You know, there's below market rents. And again, it's like, we're really, you know, we feel good about the area that we're in. So, you know, plan is to renovate the remaining units that haven't been renovated. You know, we have a few items that we have to do per the loan, you know, asphalt striping and whatnot, some concrete repair. But the plan is really just to, you know, optimize operations, cash flow, we believe we will be able to, refinance in, say 2 to 3 years. So the Freddie Mac loan that we got we paid for the accelerated step down. So after year two, I think we're at a 2% prepayment penalty. Our lender has said that a lot of times, once you're to that level, if you refi with Freddie, they'll waive that 2%. So it's a possibility that we try to refi, just depending on where we're at in the market and where lending is at in a couple of years. But if not, I mean, we're locked in at a 4.2 rate for 7 years. So, we're happy to stay with that and just kind of enjoy the cash flow.
Yeah. Awesome. What does retirement mean to you, and how has multifamily investing kind of gotten you there quicker than other investment vehicles would?
So it's a good question. So I don't necessarily foresee myself as quote unquote being retired. What what it means to me is being able to control my days and being able to kind of create the life that I'm looking for and the days that I'm looking for, like how I want my days to be. And right now my days they're very long. So, I mean, my alarm goes off at 4:15 in the morning, and for an hour I'm able to, do stuff that I have to do for these deals. So if I'm raising equity for a deal, if I'm, I'm either underwriting something or I'm creating the emails I need to go out, or I'm, talking via email with some investors because, not a lot of people are up at that hour. I'm to my, what we'll call my day job as a prosthetist usually by 6 in the morning, each day, Monday through Friday. And then, I get home a little bit earlier. So I'm usually home at about 5. I'll finish up around 4, home around 5. And I have a wife, I have 4 kids. So, they need my time as well. And then there'll be a little bit of extra time at the back end of the day to do what I need to do. For retirement for me, it's I feel like that big chunk of time in the middle of the day is something that's outside my control, right? I can't say just one day, I can't go to work today because, I need to do this, that, or whatever, during these hours. That is completely and 100% outside of my control. There's patients that are going to be there. I'm tied to that. I'm tied to a vacation schedule. I'm tied to, asking permission to maybe leave early to see a kid's sports game or something. So those are the things that I want to get, gain control of. And so that's sort of what retirement, if you will, looks for me. It's not kind of sitting back on a beach, but it's kind of taking those hours that I currently do outside of normal business hours and bringing them into normal business hours and, giving the focuses that I need to give there, but also giving my family enough, attention and being there for the kids and being there for the wife and, being there for me, the self-care part of it. So, that's what retirement looks for me, kind of controlling my days and kind of a life by design.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so much for so many people, it's just out of their control. And, I think it's huge for listeners that may have this W-2 job, that can look at you that you have a day job, and then so it's a little bit before you wake up early, you do some work for your investments, you have your family time, and you do some extra at night. There's a way to find that time. It's just for that long-term goal of having that control over your life, having extra time with family, being able to dictate your own schedule, and perhaps not having to worry about the financial aspect of it, where you can take a little weight off. It's not so much a financial position, it seems. Once people kind of have this, that light bulb goes off, it's not so much a finances issue that they're concerned about for retirement. People want to retire by just having control where they don't have to worry about that. There's so much more to life than money.
And when you're retired, I mean, that's what you're doing is you're controlling your day, So, I mean, you're doing what you want, in that day. And I mean, honestly, one of my biggest fears is, you work somewhere, you never know if it's, you're at kind of at the mercy of the job, if there's going to be a job for whatever reason or another. And what do? You work till you're, 65 years old or so, and and then you try to live off what's, you know, what's left. So it's just, it's, you know, for me, that's scary. Like, that's not what I want to do. I don't want to, you know, grind and grind my entire life. And then, you know, when I'm old and achy, you know, yeah, some time to, at that point, I guess, not know what to do. You know, what do you do at that point? So, you know, don't want to retire, but definitely want to control the days.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, what was really one thing, whether it was a life event or a book you read or a podcast you listened to, what was one thing that really made you take action to step up within multifamily? I know he had been investing, you know, kind of to get in. So both getting in and then to really broaden and increase that scale of which you invest in multifamily.
Well, I tell you what, I mean, I'm a big believer in mentorships and, you know, all that stuff. So, I mean, like I said before, I joined the Jake and Gino community and a lot of the stuff kind of, you know, corresponded to that. So, I mean, that first equity raise, I think they were doing an equity raise at that point. So, I mean, it was great because, you know, as they're doing it, you know, they're kind of coaching me on what to do on my end and cheering me along. And like I said, the timing was just sort of perfect. So, you know, kind of getting in that group with like-minded people and, you know, people that honestly, like I hadn't hung around with before I did join. You know, you always hear like, you want to surround yourself with like-minded people, or, you know, you are the average of people that you hang out with. And, you know, for me, I didn't know how to find those people. So, I mean, you know, I joined this community and, you know, the Jake and Gino community, I should say, and it put me around those people. It put me around you. It put me around, you know, the partners on the Jeffersonville deal. It, you know, it helped me on the co-sponsorship with this other group that I became, you know, became friends with. So, that's really for me has been the, you know, the launching pad, if you will.
Okay. And, you know, that's the thing is by being able to show up or, you know, have that question of, well, where am I going to get around these people? There's a lot of groups out there, a lot of mentorship programs. There's, you know, in different, some are focused a little bit more in a certain area of the country or, you know, so for people that are really looking to get into it, look into that. You know, there's a lot of solid options and it's finding the right one for you because when you do, it can really propel your growth. Because, you know, when did you start, you know, kind of gaining on that sponsorship side? You know, was that a couple of years ago? Was that last year? I guess now we're in 2020. So yeah, last year kind of, what was that kind of based off of when you really started amping up into that?
Yeah, that was last year. Okay. That was last year. So it all happened pretty quickly. The duplex was a 2016 purchase. The fourplex was a 2017 purchase. The 13 unit happened in 18. And then, you know, a lot of the limited partnership deals, general partnership deals were in 19, and this 42 is going to close here in 20.
Yeah, it's awesome. 664 units as a general partner in 1 year. That's pretty incredible. So congratulations to your success. And I'm sure obviously with closing on 42 in the near future here, we'll have to a great start for 2020. So with 2020, what is your biggest objective or goal that you have for this year? You know, in a year's time, what do you, if there's one main goal, what would that be?
So I kind of broke my goals down to personal, family, and business. So the business goal is, you know, I kind of want to be lead on a 100 unit plus property, you know, with the guys I'm working on that 42 with. So, you know, I'd ultimately like to, you know, put the deal together, create the business plan, do the projections, use our relationships, and, you know, put out a deal that can, you know, that can work for many.
Awesome. So how do you like to give back?
You know, it's, in any way, I mean, a lot of it is, you have to find the opportunity. You know, we recently did a co-sponsorship where we gave away our co-sponsorship share, to a local family, where the husband had passed away from pancreatic cancer. And I mean, you know, we were friends, and you know, the wife, I should say, now has three young kids that are similar age to my kids. So, you know, things like that come up, you try to help and do what you can. And, you know, so that's one, you know, that's one way. And just kind of giving, you know, what you can, whether it's something like that, whether it's giving an introduction, you know, anything. I think one of my all time favorite books is The Go-Giver. And I try to read it at every, you know, every Thanksgiving time. And, you know, that kind of personifies it. I can't say, you know, that I have a, like a philanthropic business, or, you know, I have a nonprofit that I run, but, you know, just in ways that you can give to, you know, to give, just give, and don't even think of it as giving, just think of it as being, you know?
Yeah. That's incredible to take that portion. You know, you're putting in all of the work, you know, with being a co-sponsor and just having all of that, and you will continue to put in that work, and to have the generosity to see someone that their life change and you're able to help them out. I mean, that's just incredible. And that's, you know, something that really strikes with me is, you know, there's a lot of money to be made in this industry and in the world in general, but, you know, within this industry, to have that money to be able to impact other lives in better, in, you know, meaningful ways. And you do that already starting out on a community basis within these properties, where if you have a distressed property and you're able to improve that, that improves that property, which can improve the neighborhood. You're providing jobs for people. You're improving the lives of your residents. And then the earnings on that, you're able to give to charity or give more time, or in this case, which I'm sure took a little bit of creativity on that aspect, to be able to give away your portion of that sponsorship to help some family friends that, you know, their life changed and you're able to help it out. And that's incredible. So that's,
I really have to give a lot of credit to Sahara Equity, and it's, you know, it's Reddy Gondra and Jazz Cower, because this project was one I was co-sponsoring. And I mean, it's a long story, but there was a fire and things, you know, we didn't know what was ultimately going to happen. It ultimately closed and everything, but there was such an oversubscription that I only really got one investor in, because I was telling my investors to just wait until kind of insurance proceeds came in to find out where this deal was going to shake out. You know, I wasn't comfortable telling my investors to, you know, to wire their funds in just yet, because everything became an unknown to a certain degree. All right. And at the end of the day, with everybody else invested, and I only got one investor in, you know, like I had one guy's money was sent back because too much money was sent in, and, you know, others wanted to invest, but, you know, I still think we played it right. But point being, that was the deal that was supposed to, you know, my share was going to somebody else. And, you know, my share became very small because of, you know, ultimately only bringing in $50,000 of investment dollars. But they knew what I was doing, and they're, you know, they're cutting a check for her, you know, in the amount of $5,000 just to, you know, to make up. So, you know, I got to give them credit there, because, you know, they stepped up as well. And it's you know, like I said, it's finding the right people to work with. And that's why we have such a great relationship. You know, I don't want to say I didn't expect it at all, but it's like, it doesn't surprise me that they did that.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And, you know, there's so many great people in this industry and willing to partner up and help each other out. And in this case, help out an expansion of you. So that's great. And, you know, kind of wrap up here, how can our listeners learn more about you, get in contact with you?
So we have an email. I have an email address. I have a website. Website is www.rustic-capital.com. You can get in touch with us there. My email address is my first name, which is Gwaith, spelled G-W-Y-E-T-H. That's at rustic-capital.com. And LinkedIn, you can find me there. Shouldn't be too hard. There's not a lot of Gwaith out there.
Must say, you're the first Gwaith that I've ever met.
Yeah.
The first and the best, right?
If you look for, you know, the wrong one, you'll get my dad, but he can always point you in my direction.
Awesome. Well, wonderful. So thank you so much for your time and being able to share your experience and a little bit of insight and just kind of how you face some hurdles and, you know, just being upfront about it, trying to find a solution for that problem, how it makes it much easier to work out in the end. And, you know, the power of building relationships, you know, I think that's something that's huge in this industry, and, you know, you can certainly attest to it. And yeah, so thank you for the time, and thank you to our listeners. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it on social media and subscribe and leave a review for the podcast. Always appreciate feedback. And with that, everyone have a great day and make some moves in multifamily so you can expedite that time to get to retirement. Take care. Bye.